On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we are getting down with the crown with the new series of Victoria, bathing in Benjamins for the latest season of Billions, and starting to vogue enthusiastically for Ryan Murphy's Pose, which finally lands on these shores. All that, and we still had the energy to do the five movements necessary to travel to another dimension for the utterly gonzo and entirely brilliant second season of Netflix's The OA. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, where this week we have projected our consciousnesses across space and time into a parallel reality in which our very own Terry White has seen her worst fears realised as she's been transmogrified from the gobby northerner we all know and love into a middle-aged white man.
It's the dream.
It's the dream. That's right. Terry is sadly unable to join us this week, being as she is on the other side of the Atlantic. But do not panic, because subbing for Terry as the person who gets expanse-splained to on this week's podcast is a very worthy replacement. He's a writer, a broadcaster, and a long-serving veteran of both the British entertainment press and the 80s clubbing scene. He's a man who not only worked at Melody Maker and The Enemy back in their heyday and has doubtless got a black book of celebrity friends to rival Boyd's, but is also intimately familiar with 60s sleuth Simon Templar, having literally written the book on Roger Moore's The Saint, specifically The Saint from Big Screen to Small Screen and Back Again, available now from all good booksellers. He is, of course, Mr. Paul Simper. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. And it's the most laborious title ever, that.
Did you not get a say on that one?
Oh, it was meant to be just on the 60s series. Then they were like, oh, hold on, there's a Val Kilmer movie coming out. So can we somehow manage to crowbar the movie in? So let's go back to the beginning and then let's go to the end. But it's nearly all Roger Moore, basically.
And are you feeling up to being Terry this week?
Is anyone ever up to being Terry? I did email her and asked if there was any sort of proxy swearing that she wanted me to do. And she said just to take the piss out of you, which I think is very unfair.
I mean, that seems roughly what she does, so that's good. Now we've got you here. Now, you may be aware. Yeah. Have you listened to the podcast?
I've listened to every single one.
Good man. So you'll be aware, of course, that Boyd's Little Book of Celebrity Friends is something of an ongoing fascination on this particular podcast. But I'm going to put you on the spot right here and now, because you likewise have a selection of celebrity friends. So I'm going to ask you right now, if you were to pull out your phone, who is the most famous person you could right here and now call? I won't ask you to do it, but who could you call?
Oh, Sade.
Oh, he's done it. He's pulled Sade out of the bag. Because I have to say, I might actually say that with all of my celebrity friends, I'm jealous of Sade. Yeah, she's a fucking legend, Sade. Yeah. Ooh, I mean, you know, my celebrity friends are just like TV actors.
She once came and stayed at my mum and dad's.
Oh, here we go.
See, Boyd,
he's totally.
The shine is coming off you very rapidly.
He has removed the shine. Unbelievable. Which, considering you're sitting in front of two bald middle-aged white men, he's a fully, magnificently coiffed middle-aged white
That's
man.
That's true.
It's the only thing separating Paul from us two is his full head of
You do have an
luscious
annoying
hair.
Head of hair.
But I can't grow anything. There's no beard or anything here.
That's true. We're outstubbing you.
Sade. Totally done me.
So, Boyd, who's yours? Like, in your phone right now, who's the most famous person you have?
Oh, God. I don't know. Maybe Jack Whitehall, maybe? Or he's pretty... Oh, no, James Corden. James Corden.
Oh,
yeah, because he's quite big now.
Of course.
In America.
Of course, Corden.
Yeah, but Sade. I mean, come on. Yeah. That's great.
Literally, mine is Empire's Chris Hewitt. It's not great, is it?
that really doesn't count,
It's not
James.
Great, is it?
Yeah.
And you. That's basically you and Empire's Chris Hewitt.
Yeah,
that's the extent of what I've got. All right, well, you've already heard him, but joining Paul and myself in what is swiftly becoming a crucible of star fucking is the master of all such things, confidant of the rich and famous, consigliere of the entertainment elite, but a man who has written precisely nothing about The Saint. It's Boyd Hilton. Hello, Boyd.
That is true. God, yeah. Welcome to our middle-aged, middle-class white boy special, as I'm calling it.
It is.
Well, honestly, it's not for lack of trying. You know when like the BBC has panel games where everyone's a man, basically, and probably middle-class as well. This is our equivalent of that, but we do say we have tried to get a working-class woman to take the place of Terry.
Where was I on the list then before you?
No, that's insulting, isn't it? Oh, my God, I'm sorry. Oh, God, I must apologise. But purely on the grounds
of completely
diversity, we are definitely
Absolutely.
Breaking every diversity rule in the book.
We are.
But Paul is a joy. And we're also the three least, I don't know, males, probably. Do you know what I'm saying?
I don't think
any of us are toxically masculine.
No.
That's my feeling.
No.
If we are, then...
Yeah.
Only in a nerdy sense.
But you like football, Boyd. So
yeah, but in a very, you know,
in a very middle class
modern middle class way. Yeah. It's still club level Arsenal. It's not like I'm roughing it with the lads.
Now I dissed you about the same thing. However, in preparation for this, I did, knowing nothing about the answer to this, I went onto Amazon and I put in Boyd Hilton to see if you had written something.
Oh, yeah.
Now, would you like to know what came up?
You know you're going to get confused with the historian at Cambridge, aren't you?
Do you know what came up? First of all, there was Corn Cash Commerce, Economic Policies of the Tory Governments, 1815 to 1830, which I'm just going to assume is one of yours.
That's the historian at Cambridge.
Yes. And secondly, was Inside Little Britain.
That was me.
Oh, yes. I have a copy.
Is this your claim to literary fame?
Yeah, that was actually me, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you want to know something?
Go on.
Never seen it. Not one episode.
Of course
episode.
You haven't. I mean, I'd be disappointed if you had. Have you ever heard of Matt Lucas and David Williams?
Yes.
They're quite famous.
Yes, yeah. Yes. I've heard of them
That
both.
Should be the next Make You Laugh.
Oh,
it's
no.
An episode
no,
of
no,
that.
No, it's a sketch show. I can't do that. That's my kryptonite.
I can't do that.
No, I can't, no sketch I can't shows
do
ever.
No, I can't do them. Like comedies generally, I like...
About 3 weeks ago, comedy was your kryptonite.
Yeah,
we've kind of slowly getting over that.
Sketches. Yeah. Me and Chris Hewitt argue about this all the time. Like, I don't understand why sketch shows are a thing. Like
what? But wait a minute! Didn't you supervise a Monty Python retrospective in the first issue of the highly esteemed Planet TV magazine?
Yeah, but ironically,
oh my god, Jesus wept.
No, it's just you know how I am with long form entertainment. Like, it's standalone episodes of things that don't have an ongoing story automatically annoy me. But if you break that down to a show consisting entirely of really short vignettes which don't go anywhere, it's just like it's an
I'm
existential
just,
nightmare.
I'm just writing
me.
Down. You know how I am with long form entertainment, and we'll just leave it at that.
Right, well, enough of that. Should we dive straight into what we've been watching this week? Paul, you are our honoured guest, so why don't you go first?
Cheat is the one that I've watched this week over all four nights.
Oh, yeah, which we slightly...
we missed it, didn't we?
Prejudicially...
go on.
Well, in the picking of stuff, you know, last week we went for like two Netflix shows and something. I can't remember what the other one was.
It was a load of stuff we hated.
Which we ended up not really liking, and we probably should have done Cheat, which is yeah. seemingly, because it's seemingly a mainstream ITV thriller.
Absolutely.
We probably, you know, with all due lack of respect, we probably should have paid more attention to it. But is it good?
It was very watchable, but I had many questions. I mean, the basic premise is Molly Windsor is Rose, this pupil at a college that looks very like Cambridge, but apparently we're not allowed to say it's Cambridge, even though it was actually filmed, I think, quite a lot at Cambridge.
Right.
But
okay.
There must be reasons, I think, possibly because...
Because bad things happen
yeah. there, particularly with the porters. There's a very dodgy porter. But anyway, Rose is a pupil. Catherine Kelly is Leah, who's her university professor. And at the start of it, the initial cheat, is that she believes that Rose has cheated on her paper.
Right.
As we go into it, it basically Rose becomes more and more... messes with Leah's mind. She's you know, greatly affronted that she's been accused of being cheating. So her way to get back is to then destroy Leah's marriage to husband Adam, Tom Goodman Hill.
Sounds perfectly reasonable.
So yeah. It's like one of those kind of like from hell. It's like the babysitter from hell.
It is a bit
the neighbour from hell.
Yeah, it's still...
This is the student from hell.
That's the thing I find a bit odd about it. That, I mean, you've got two... great actors in Catherine Kelly and Molly Windsor. And Molly Windsor's particularly great. You can't read her. There's which I think is a lot of the joy of the show comes from her performance. Kate Kelly is Leah's kind
Did
of...
Did you call her Kate Kelly?
Yeah. Okay, sorry, Kate.
This is good for a start. This Catherine Kelly to the rest of us. to Friend of the Stars, Simps, it's Kate Kelly. That is brilliant.
I did once marry her for a photo shoot.
There you go. Of course you did. There you go. You see, we could be stepping up to a different level of star.
This is
star
a whole other yeah. thing, isn't
Kate,
it?
So Kate Kelly plays the professor.
That was in her Coronation Street.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Should I carry on watching it? I've got three episodes to go. Is it worth it?
Well, you want to find out what happens, particularly with Rose's character. But I have to say that I got to the last episode and made a list of questions as to is it going to be this result? Is it going to be that result? And I guessed all of them.
Oh.
And that doesn't ever happen with me. I never managed to guess them. So, I mean...
I don't think it's a wholehearted recommendation.
No, well, it doesn't sound like
James
it.
Is,
no.
James is never going to watch this
no,
in a million
I'm never
years.
Watching
it
Cheats.
Has been popular. It has been
well,
I think it's... What was it? ITV Dramas... second most popular Monday night drama that's this year after
Damning
Manhunt.
With faint praise.
I know, very random it says Monday night, but I suppose... You know,
ITV drama is the second most popular thing that went out Monday to Thursday consecutively.
And it's been getting over 5 million, which is not to be sniffing.
If you want to watch ITV's second most popular Monday night debut of what's happened so far this year, then Cheat is available for you. I've watched some things. I've obviously watched Sons of Anarchy, but we're not going to talk about that. I caught up and watched... I say caught up. I've watched some more Fleabag and Derry Girls, which they've handily made available to me, which is nice. Enjoyed that enormously, but won't spoil it for anyone. But what I do want to talk about is Star Trek Discovery, unsurprisingly to you.
That is the least surprising news.
The only surprising
thing is you haven't mentioned it for about 3 weeks.
This is what I'm saying, but this was an interesting one. So last week's one was a throwback to an original Star Trek, original series episode.
That's exciting.
And it starts off with not previously on Star Trek Discovery, previously on Star Trek, flashback to the 60s typeface, 60s Star Trek, and it's
brilliant.
From the original series.
Oh my God, I need to watch this.
And it goes back, you see the original Pike from the original series on Talos 4, where they encounter the Talosians. Do you remember this?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So in this new episode of Star Trek Discovery, the new Pike, which is now Anson Mount, ends up going to Talos 4. And that's where, no spoilers, but the Spock is around, and there are Talosians. And do you remember the human who lived with the Talosians, the blonde Talosian? She's turned into Melissa George, but she's back as well.
What a great thing! I'm really excited.
That's
funny because they were hinting at that. Do you remember, I think I watched up to episode 4, maybe in one of the episodes that I watched, they had a scene where someone walks in and there's the set pretty much from the original Star Trek. Thinking, they're kind of hinting at getting involved in that. I'm genuinely excited.
So for fans of the original series, of which I'll be honest, I'm not one. I'm all about the next gen.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
How can you not love the original?
It's
got some kitsch charm, but I mean, fucking, it's no Star Trek Next Generation.
Oh.
And Star Trek The Generation is no Deep Space Nine. So, you know.
It's got the best costumes.
He invented the whole thing. He prefers Deep Space Nine.
Yes, but this is the thing. The art form has been elevated since. They may have been the first, but they are not the best. It peaked with DS9.
I feel it did.
That should be self-evident by it.
Self-evident.
It really should.
Which did you see first then?
Well, I would have watched the original series first, but I didn't get into Star Trek properly until Next Generation. I got really into it. And then Deep Space Nine, when that was firing on all cylinders, I was like, this Star Trek will never be better than this. And it has never been better.
I feel I should be doing Terry and checking my phone at this point.
Or you just be slagging him off for being a massive Star Trek nerd. Do you watch Star Trek?
Since then. I didn't like the way it looked. It just seemed odd to me. I wanted it to always look like the original series. I know that's... You know.
Fair enough, But the new Discovery is good, I have to say.
Discovery is good. Everyone should be watching that. Boyd, what have you been watching?
Well, on Friday, which is the day we're recording this, but this will be going out on Monday.
Yes.
But on Friday, Netflix dropped a new documentary series, The Disappearance of Madeleine McCann.
It's almost like Terry never left.
Right. Now, if Terry was here, I nearly said to Paul this morning, but I was too busy. He was having trouble getting his Netflix stuff out. I nearly said, can you watch some of this thing? Because I knew Terry would have watched it all by now, pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've already watched 3 episodes out of 8. And so right first thing this morning as we're recording on Friday, this has been a controversial project. Right?
I'm not surprised. It doesn't sound like a great idea to me, and I know nothing about it.
Well, in the sense that, first of all, I don't think Netflix ever confirmed this was happening, this series.
Right.
But so there was kind of rumored that Netflix was commissioning a proper, fully comprehensive and expensive documentary about the Madeleine McCann case. And now it has arrived in all its 8-hour form. And they didn't do the normally we get to hear about Netflix stuff, even when they dropped something fairly surprisingly. I haven't received one press release about this show. And there's a thing in The Guardian about how it's probably going to be out this week. Anyway, it did arrive. And the McCanns are not involved at all.
Right.
So that's the first thing to make clear. And they were asked to be, I think, and then I think Netflix, according to an article I read in The Guardian, Netflix approached them and said, do you want to watch it and check, you know, that you're happy with it? And they declined. So they really have. And I think they've pretty much encouraged their friends and associates. So they've still got a publicist who kind of answers press questions every now and then if anyone wants to.
So who are the interviews then?
So the interviews are with other people who were there at the time in this Portuguese holiday kind of complex where she disappeared, who kind of, but not their close friends. Do you remember that Robert Murat, who was a person of interest? He was the equivalent, or he was a suspect basically, and was taken in by the police. He's interviewed, and he's really interesting, to be fair. So almost it could have been, I've watched those episodes, and the second episode is all about him, really.
Right.
And that is a really interesting situation because, you know, he was then, he was let go, and he clearly doesn't seem to be guilty at all. He seems to be completely innocent, but was definitely a person of interest. And there's a lot of journalists interviewed. There's two people who wrote a book about it. They kind of form the basis of a lot of it. Kelvin McKenzie is interviewed, who was editor of The Sun, a controversial figure in so many ways because of his coverage of Hillsborough, etc. And I have to say I was disconcerted by the fact that Kelvin McKenzie is sitting there holding forth about this thing in a rather... in a classic McKenzie way, in an irritating way.
I was going to say, what are they asking? Are they asking him about the press coverage?
Or, yeah, they're talking about the press coverage. So it's basically, it's trying to be, so rather than being, say, Making a Murderer, which is, you know, was still the show that started all of these true crime documentary series on Netflix, Amazon Prime, etc., and everywhere's doing them now. BBC's doing a lot of them as well. Making a Murderer was a very, very laser-focused account of a case where they're talking to the people, the accused, and, you know, they're involved, and there's no reenactments or anything. There's no presenter. This was a mishmash. This has got reenactments that are quite cheesy, I have felt.
I don't like the reenactments.
Yeah, I don't like the reenactments. So there's scenes where this investigator's going into his police station. They reenact that, and it looks like something out of Narcos or something. It was not, honestly, it was weird. And then suddenly some presenter figure arrives in the middle of the street talking to camera. In the middle of episode, like literally halfway through episode one, and then doesn't come back at all. I've got up to episode three. It's a real mishmash, and there's like lavish helicopter and drone shots. Anyway, bottom line is, I am going to carry on watching it because it's fascinating. The case is fascinating, still fascinating. It reminds you a lot of the kind of weirdness surrounding it, but it does make me feel queasy. The whole experience of watching it has made me feel queasy.
Did they set up why they are doing it now? Is that sort of at the top of the...
Not really. It's just, you know, a certain amount of time has passed, and I think they just feel, right, it's time for a comprehensive look at this whole case. And maybe fair enough, you know, you can moralise about the whole true crime genre, which has exploded massively, but it is weird to watch a whole series in this, made in this way, about that particular case. So I'll be interested to see what people think. I'll be interested to see what Terry thinks when she watches it, because you're not going to watch it, James.
Absolutely obviously. Not. No.
Anyway, The Disappearance of Madeleine McCann is on Netflix now, and I guarantee by the time this goes out on Monday, it will have been, a lot of people have watched it, because people are absolutely obsessed with that case. And I do think for me, it's always the people who, by the way, the people who kind of still suspect her parents of having some involvement, those people need to really sort themselves out, because I've always found that to be absolutely ridiculous. And there's a lot of conspiracy theorists out there who talk about, you know, who kind of accuse them of being involved, and that is sickening. And this, so far, this program does not do that, thank God. That's so far. Anyway.
Well, there you go. The Disappearance of Madeleine McCann on Netflix. All of which brings us to, oh God, Make James Laugh, the incredibly narcissistically titled segment that I still think should have been called Comedy Gold. Or someone actually even suggested Funny or Dire.
Yeah, that's good. Was pretty funny. That's not narcissistic in any way.
No, I know. Yeah. That's just as bad. So, anyway, this is the one where I, enemy of fun, watch an episode of, shall we say, humour-based television and attempt to find it amusing. Is this segment getting old yet? Are people bored of hearing me be humourless? Quite possibly. But honestly, until you start complaining, I'm pressing on with it. So this week's suggestion I picked randomly based on simply quite fancying watching the show. What I didn't realise, it was also a suggestion from Ben Murray Holmes, who suggested last week's Frasier episode. So sorry to everyone else, and Ben, mate, you're now officially blacklisted.
He's giving you weekly episodes to watch.
That's
brilliant.
Ben, you're done, because we've got to give
He's like your comedy
chance.
Dealer.
Yeah, he really wants you to laugh, though, doesn't he?
So he does.
He's very
keen. Like his persistence.
Well, what Ben suggested this time is Brooklyn Nine-Nine, specifically season 1, episode 6, Halloween. Do either of you watch The 99?
I'm not up to date, but I must have watched that. Yes, I did watch that.
Yeah.
Yes.
There was a big old hoo-ha about this, wasn't it? Because it got cancelled and then it got rescued.
Yeah.
But there was a public wringing of hands and an outcry because people love this show.
They do love the show, yeah.
Yeah. I had watched the pilot way, way back in the day. I very dimly recall, but I remember nothing about it. So I watched this episode Have you seen this episode, Boyd? You
must I have must have it. Done, but it might be. You didn't send us the link to watch it, James. And it's not. It's not. By the way, that easy to come by. Because I checked. It's not on all four. Because obviously, E4 shows it. Where
DVDs,
did you find it?
There are DVDs available.
I'm not going to go and buy a DVD just to watch a 22 minute episode. Which
you're just not.
But I probably watched. I must have watched it already. Tell us what happened.
All right. So this is an episode in which a bet between Andy Samberg's detective Jake Peralta and Andre Brower's Captain Holtz kind of escalates and leads to an elaborate and kind of drawn out heist, sort of heist attempt to steal a medal from the captain's safe, all while kind of Halloween hijinks go on around them. I appreciated this show. It's very well written. No, seriously, I thought, you know what, this is a really high quality show.
Yeah,
it's really well written. It's really charming. It's really fun. I think Andy Samberg and Terry Crews are great, but Andre Brower is the absolute standout here. He is a deadpan master.
Yeah,
an absolute master. I absolutely love him. And he was great. Like, and I enjoyed that the A plot, which was trying to steal the medal. Mm. I mean, it's goofy. It's really just ridiculous.
Yeah.
The B and C plots, I could take or leave. I enjoyed the one with Terry Crews a bit because it's Terry Crews, but they weren't great. But the A plot was definitely fun. I think all in all, it's a really well-made comedy. I totally see why people like it. Did I laugh?
No. What was the closest you got to a laugh?
There is a part where Andy Samberg gets up on a desk and does a St. Crispin's Day kind of speech to sort of motivate the team to help him steal this medal. And as it was getting more and more extreme, I definitely felt a smile on my face at
forming,
that point. Yeah.
But not didn't fully evolve
there might have been the rumblings of a chuckle fermenting.
I think I know why. What's the name of the gentleman who keeps telling you to watch every week?
His name is Ben Murray Holmes.
Now, I think Ben, my guess is that he's gone this time for something, because the thing about Brooklyn Nine-Nine is it's almost like an Airplane / Naked Gun vibe, isn't it? It's got that really, it's really
very silly
police
squad.
And I think it's the silly police squad, right? Yeah. I think it's the silliest of the big mainstream American shows, more so, you know, than Big Bang Theory and all those of the current big. And so he probably thought, oh, you know, I'll go all out silly. James has got to laugh because everyone laughs at Brooklyn Nine-Nine because it's so silly, and it will do slapstick, it will do really goofy stuff, but still you didn't. So I think it was quite a clever move on his part.
He chose poorly. Do you know what? I do not do silly.
What about Airplane?
I don't find Airplane even
you
remotely
don't find
funny.
Airplane. Oh my god.
No.
This has put you on a new level because I mean, I've genuinely never met anyone who doesn't like Airplane. That is extraordinary.
No, I don't like any of those Zucker Abrams stuff. Just doesn't. Because it's silly. I don't like it.
But there's like about four gags a minute.
Yeah, I
none
know.
Of them. More. All of them different. What?
More.
There's like there's puns. There's visual gags. There's slapstick. Yes. There's none of them.
And I appreciate the artistry involved in crafting them.
Stop calling me Shirley.
Don't make me laugh. Like the, you know, I speak jive bit. Oh, no, that's well written. That's good. It's good. Well observed. Good bit of observational comedy.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Was there a time when you did used to laugh?
When I had humour.
When
was it?
No.
Was it slowly beaten out of you? Is that what you're saying?
By
working
trauma.
At Empire.
Yeah.
Did the laughter stop?
When did the laughter stop? No, see, it's
that's a great title for his autobiography. When did the laughter stop by James Dyer?
Oh, God. No. So I've said this before. I can't remember whether it was on this podcast or another. Like, so my sense of humour, what I like is I like very highbrow humour. I like very dry humour. I like very sarcastic humour. I do not like silly humour. And I don't like, you know, toilet humour, falling over each other, nonsense, that kind of stuff. And my theory for this is that that kind of humour, well, a lot of comedy in general, but that in particular exists in this heightened plane of reality where it's a surreal universe where everything is different to our own universe. It's not relatable. So it's too heightened. And I just don't connect with it. Whereas I think great comedy comes out of drama, comes out of relatable drama. So for example, the comedies, in inverted commas, I enjoyed most in the 80s were things like Beverly Hills Cop, like action comedies, where it's an action movie with nailed on comedy on it.
Okay.
And the juxtaposition between drama and comedy heightens the comedy and makes it funnier.
Boys looking puzzled.
Beverly Hills Cop, I like very, what was it you said? I like very highbrow humour, and then you've gone for Beverly Hills Cop. Oh, sorry.
Look, I'm saying that's one of the examples of humour I'm like, but I'm saying in terms of points. So the funniest TV show ever made for me is The West Wing.
Right, okay.
Which is clearly not a comedy, but It's incredibly smart. Right. And the comedy in it, because it comes out of drama.
Have you watched his genius. Have you watched his out and out comedy? Which he did
Sports Night,
yeah.
Yeah, I have seen it. Okay. I don't like it as much.
It's too much comedy.
Yeah, I like it. It's really well written and the dialogue is amazing.
Yeah.
The laugh track, which does go away, that I had issues with, but don't tell me when to laugh. And
I'm with you on that.
But I like, you know, I like the so classic comedies. Fawlty Towers, really like Fawlty Towers.
Oh, but then that is there's quite a lot of slapstick as well.
Don't expect any consistency. This is all.
But this fascinates
me. He's just making it up as it goes along.
No, but Fawlty Towers again. He's just such a brilliantly over the top character. But I wonder whether with that is there's a familiarity to it because it's a part of my childhood. I think I have an affection for it. Blackadder is very much my sense of humour. That's very silly, but the comedy, certainly in the latest, is very much based in sarcasm, and so I like that a lot as well.
I wondered if it was comedies that were people that you like to hang out with, that kind of
Love
of Derry Girls, and you know,
I can see him very much wanting to be Blackadder in the latter stages, and everyone else being Baldrick.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
You're definitely my darling.
Yeah.
Love Blackadder and Red Dwarf, because I always enjoyed the Rimmer Lister interplay. And that's pretty silly. That's a stupid show, but I do like that.
Yeah, I can see you like it.
So you like Bant.
Who?
Bant.
I like Bants. Do I like Bants? Yes.
If it's like of intellectuals in the White House, yeah.
Yes, that's exactly
Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy.
He's my golden goose, Eddie Murphy. If I could pick my dream interview, if I could pick one person in the world that I could interview, it'd be Eddie Murphy.
You've surprised me there.
Eddie
You're
Murphy.
Pulling out these surprises.
Yeah.
What about Norbert?
No, but, okay, not for Norbert, obviously, which was nominated for an Oscar, forget.
I know.
No, Eddie Murphy, because he doesn't do interviews. He's ungettable, and I idolised him in the 80s. And many of my other idols I've met, and I've never been able to speak to Eddie Murphy. But he's supposed to be doing a kind of a Coming to America sequel, so maybe... Maybe my time will come.
Mind you, we must focus on TV.
We must.
Sorry, that's my fault.
No. I mean, to be honest, if Terry had been here, we would have ended this discussion about half an hour ago.
That's true. We wouldn't. So we've established that once again, I have not been moved to laughter by this particular segment, which really, if you don't want us to do, please tell me and I'll stop doing it.
Let's get the most reaction, I think.
Yeah, maybe. It's a fan favourite. Slightly like I'm the butt of the joke on this one, but that's all good.
It's comedy gold.
Shall we move on from comedy gold to news?
Yes. Now, I've got a good news story for you, and I'm going to test you. I have to go first because I'm testing you on this, you, James, but you can join in, Paul. So, what do these numbers have in common? What are these numbers?
Are they
what do
the
they
numbers,
represent?
Are they the numbers from Lost?
No.
Okay.
54, 58, 82, 78, 80, and 80.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and you're going to like the answer.
They're not the numbers from Lost.
No.
Are they numbers, episodes of Deep Space Nine that involve Quark?
No. They are the running times of the last series of Game of Thrones.
Yes, I do know.
Say them again.
So we were led to believe, right?
I thought they were going to be like
they're all going to be feature length. They're not.
No.
So the longest one is 82.
Right.
And the last two are 80 minutes each. But the first two are less than an hour.
Yeah, funny enough, we argued about this in the office. Like, me and Chris were getting on our high horse about this because we were promised six episodes, but feature length. Not a single one of those is feature length. Not one.
No. Well, I mean, 82 is a very short feature.
That's a fucking short film.
I mean, it's the kind of feature if they put it out in the cinema, people would go, this is clearly shit.
That's a double bill.
It's a double bill,
Like, that's really genuinely disappointing.
I know.
Because I wanted all of them to be, 1 hour 30 plus, pushing 2 hours for the finale.
Yeah.
And I feel like, frankly, I've been screwed.
And they've spent many, many months doing this as well.
Winter is coming. Apparently it's a small flurry rather than the blizzard that we'd been promised. Yeah.
And they also the air dates. So, I mean, basically they're six and they all follow consecutively.
Yes.
But the whole thing, all of Game of Thrones will be over on Sunday, May 19th.
What's the total runtime, Boyd?
Oh, well, I can't work out. Steady.
When do we then get pre-Game of Thrones?
Oh, I think I'm not too earliest next year. That's all being made now. Like, they keep gearing up to make that now. Yeah, Jane Goldman and
Co. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm monstrously excited about Game of Thrones coming back. But that has genuinely taken the wind out of my sails a little bit.
Yeah, I knew it would.
They must have known that would piss people off.
Especially because they lied. They literally lied. They told us they were going to be fucking feature length. That is not a feature.
It's true. Maybe they never actually confirmed that. Maybe they just kind of hinted at
because
it.
But the first ones, that's shorter than some of the episodes of the previous season.
I know. That is the particular shocker,
Honestly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, but that's not the big... I mean, that probably is now the big news. But the other news that's been rattling around this week has obviously been the cancellation of One Day at a Time.
Yes.
By Netflix. So this is clearly a big thing. I have no idea what the show is. I've never seen it. I don't even know what it's about.
That's because it's a sitcom.
Because it's a sitcom. But the whole internet is on fire because they've cancelled it.
Yeah, I think the reason why... This is a remake of a... So Norman Lear is the American king of sitcoms, and he did a lot of the classic 70s and 80s sitcoms, and this was a remake of one of his old sitcoms, but I think the reason people loved it and it became a kind of fan favorite is because it was very diverse. It had a lot of representation. It was about a Hispanic family, you know, all of those issues, and it was funny. I mean, you know, I've only watched a couple of episodes, to be honest, but it was definitely a big thing because it was like, this is how you do a Norman Lear vintage sitcom, but you'd modernize it for our current times. And so it felt very relevant, and, you know, for all of that reason. So I think there's a general feeling, oh, you know, Netflix has got rid of this very diverse thing that was doing really well with representation of, you know, all kinds of sexuality and race and gender and all of that, and now they've ditched it. And, you know, and I
so
think...
So what have they said? What's the...
And the other thing is they put out a statement, which they never do. They tweeted about it. So they announced that they were axing it, and they kind of apologised to the fans and said it just wasn't getting enough viewers. So obviously they never revealed anything. So they are kind of having their cake and eating it at the moment. They did this recently. They mentioned a couple of shows. I think they said that Sex Education was a massive hit for them, which is great.
Yes.
But, you know, they've kind of said this didn't get enough viewers to sustain it. But as other people have pointed out, they're making billions of billions. They're spending billions of millions of pounds. Surely one little sitcom.
Yeah, they could have kept it.
They could have kept. You know, there are massively lavish, expensive shows out there. You know, Turn Up Charlie, that which I think is a terrible show. I love it just now, but, you know, get rid of that. Don't recommission that. If they recommission that, I'll be amazed and I'll be stunned because this was a popular, good, funny show.
Surely they could have got rid of that nippletastic robot nonsense that we reviewed last week.
Oh, yes.
And I can't believe
I didn't like the sound of that.
No. All right, fine. Well, that's a shame. So rest in peace, One Day at a Time.
Yeah.
David Tennant won't be in the final season of Jessica Jones. This was something that was confirmed this week, if anyone's interested.
Yes.
Is anyone interested in Jessica Jones?
I liked him in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great.
So
he turned up,
kind of in the second season, but he's not going to be in the third.
Okay.
And that's it, really. It's not very exciting.
Because of Good Omens, or...?
No, just... I mean, his character's dead, so it seems like reasonable.
I mean, it makes sense.
His character died, though, in the first season, and yet still appeared in the second one, so it's not a barrier. But yeah, he won't be back, which is, you know, one... If you weren't going to watch Jessica Jones, that's, I guess, one less reason to possibly have watched it.
Amy Adams, you see, she's got a deal with HBO after the brilliance of Sharp Objects, which was pretty much...
It was.
One of
very,
the best,
very good.
If not the best thing on last year. Paul, I'm pretty angry.
I absolutely loved it.
That won't be back. Yeah. I don't think.
Sharper objects.
It was definitely its own story. But she's got a deal with HBO, who made Sharp Objects, to create more drama series for them. And the first project is an adaptation of best-selling novel The Poisonwood Bible, which everyone I know has read.
I haven't, except you.
I haven't either. It was about the wife of an evangelical missionary who takes her and her daughters to the Belgian Congo in 1959.
Oh.
And a lot of things exciting. It's a really huge popular novel published in 1998. But I'm just excited that Amy Adams is doing more stuff with HBO because Sharp Objects was brilliant.
Yeah.
The Congo's becoming more popular, isn't it? The Widows in the Congo, isn't it, as well?
Yes.
Which apparently hadn't been used much for...
I read about that in the Congo. I think I read about that in your interview with the makers of The Widow in Pilot TV.
Absolutely.
Yes. Which we'll be reviewing soon, I'm very sure.
I'm sure we will. There's a new series being set in the Orphan Black universe.
Yes.
In development at AMC. I'm confused by this. Because apparently it is neither a reboot nor a sequel to Orphan Black. It just takes place in the same world, which is, you know... this one. So it's basically a show on AMC that takes place on Earth.
Wasn't the Orphan Black a bit in the future, though?
Was it? I don't know. I mean, it had futuristic elements because it was cloning and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was set in the future.
I thought it was set in almost a dystopian future. Maybe I'm wrong.
Which characters are they keeping
then?
None.
No, new, as he says.
It just takes place in the
story,
same world.
New characters in the same world, okay. Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, I watched the first season and a half of Orphan Black. I mean, I did drop out. I haven't seen it all.
No, I did.
It was very good. Tatiana Maslany was epic in that.
Yeah. Ethan Hawke, do you see he's starring in a TV series?
I did, yes.
Good Lord Bird.
Yeah.
Yes.
Quite the title.
It's based on a novel by James McBride about 19th century slavery abolitionist James Brown. And Ethan Hawke is going to play him.
And John Brown. It's John Brown.
Is it?
Yeah,
I'm pretty James. Sure. I've printed it out. It says James.
Really?
Yeah.
Because my understanding of James Brown...
Not the is
I know there's a famous James Brown, the godfather of soul. Yes. Oh, no, I'm not saying it's that one.
So you're saying this is the godfather of abolitionism.
I've printed it out and it says... And I did not type that out myself.
All right. I'm pretty sure it's John Brown, but okay. Sure, go on. James
Maybe
Brown,
you're right.
The godfather of 19th century abolitionists.
John Brown. It must be John Brown. It'd be great if it was James Brown. Anyway, Ethan Hawke is executive producing it, yeah. Co-writing it, and starring in it.
Yeah. So this is actually around events from 1859. It was a raid on the army depot, which kind of kick-started the Civil War, as I recall. So it's as I recall from reading the news article about this show, not yes. from being okay. there at the time.
Right.
So that's it. But Ethan Hawke in a limited series is always good. Yes. I am saying, but more exciting than that, and something that we touched on in the Empire podcast is Taika Waititi is doing a Time Bandits TV series.
Oh yeah.
Which is insane and presumably very good news. As I mentioned on Empire, I've never actually watched Time Bandits.
No.
No, genuinely. Like, it's one of my blind spots. I don't, like...
But you want to?
No, it's a comedy.
Well, it isn't it?
Well, it's Gilliam, isn't it? It's going to be a surreal mental gonzo trip through time.
That is true, with Sean Connery.
Exactly, and I imagine it's got more than the little Python DNA in it, so...
but not kind of like Holy Grail levels or anything.
Well, a few things have.
No.
But that's the thing that's happening. So yes. And this is going to be on the Apple streaming service.
Oh, that thing.
Yeah, exactly that. And Taika Waititi, of course, being director of Thor Ragnarok, and obviously he's got What We Do in the Shadows TV series
yes,
coming as well.
Which I was going to say, the reviews of that, because that's out in America, I think, this week, isn't it? The reviews have been really good.
Yeah,
I've seen.
Very
exciting. And it's got Matt Berry in it, so I'm incredibly excited about that, because he's the funniest man on earth, unless you're James Dyer.
Do we? Of course. Do we know when that LOL
Fest is coming?
I don't know
when that LOL Fest is coming to British TV, or where it's going to be shown.
Yeah.
Which is annoying, because I really want to see it.
Is there a UK date for Killing Eve yet, or is that still in the ether?
No, unbelievably not.
That's demented.
I know,
it's still
ridiculous.
Torturing you.
It's still torturing me.
Because how far away is that in the States? Like, that's upon us, isn't it, pretty
April
much?
April 7th, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty close,
time,
and
yeah.
we still have no clue when we're going to see that.
It's really irritating.
Honestly, come on, BBC, sort your stuff out.
Yeah.
Also, Evan Evagora has joined the cast of Picard. So that's pretty exciting.
Have you done more news stories on this podcast about Picard or on the Empire podcast about Dune? It must be like fairly even.
It's fairly balanced. We get, I would say, most of the complaints we get on our iTunes comments are about Picard.
Are they?
About either Picard or just Star Trek in general. No one's really latched onto the expanse of that.
Maybe you should take those comments to heart and move on.
Terry would have shut this
down
by now.
This is the end of TV news. I think that's probably the end of TV news.
All right, fine. That's the end of TV news. We end on Picard. But before we do go... Before we do go, I would like to say a heartfelt sorrow for the passing of Jan Michael Vincent, who sadly died last week at 74. Michael Vincent, of course, being Stringfellow Hawk from the 1980s staple Airwolf, which genuinely, like, that and Knight Rider, that was the 80s for me. They were the shows like Dukes of Hazzard, all that stuff, Street Hawk, yeah, I mean, don't care. But for me, it was Knight Rider and Airwolf, and Jan Michael Vincent was a bit of a legend.
I absolutely watched him, he was a massive figure, wasn't he?
And he unfortunately died last week at the age of 74. Now, before we move on to reviews... I have an important announcement. Paul, you might be able to help me with this, okay. So I'm going to draw upon your powers as a long-standing music journalist because Q Magazine, which is our publisher's world-famous music magazine, have launched their very own podcast.
Right.
And while I naturally bristle at the thought of anyone listening to any podcast, really, other than this one, it's actually really good.
It's great.
The general premise is they kind of take a deep dive into the history of a popular music act band person. Which is explored each week. And the first one is with someone called a Sleaford Mod. Now, Paul,
this is brilliant.
Can you please shed some light onto who Sleaford Mod is?
Sleaford Mod?
The Sleaford Mods, the band. Sleaford Mods, they're a band. Oh my God.
Not from my
this
era.
This is amazing.
Wow. Did you stop listening to music in 1990? Is this a new discovery?
I stopped listening
in about 1988.
So, I mean, honestly, Terry's going to be curious.
Professional music journalist.
Sleaford Mods are a
Paul
massive...
Simper.
Yeah,
doesn't know who the Sleaford Mods are.
That is a massive...
This is extraordinary.
I was a music journalist in the 80s. Were they... Were they in the 80s?
No, they're still going now. They're current.
Oh, are they?
Well,
yes.
I didn't know that.
Of course, that's why Q's featuring them, because I think in the esteemed podcast they're talking about.
I thought you were going to go way back in time for this, if they're diving. Well, tell us about the Sleaf Man.
I couldn't tell you. I was hoping you could fill me
in. Good. They're the good... What's the phrase? The acceptable face of white boy rock in this day and age. Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying.
It doesn't sound like a massive thumbs up.
No, they're good. They're really good.
Oh, okay.
They're very unique. They're funny. They're cocky. They're good.
Not to be a twat boy, but you can't be very unique. It's kind of you either are or you're
not. Well, I'm just filling in for your lack of knowledge, so you've got to give me a...
All right, well, sorry, if you do know who the Sleaford mods are, you
just Sleaford mods,
this.
Not the.
Oh. They're not the.
No.
There's no definite article.
There's no definite article.
It's just Sleaford mods.
No.
So they're mods, but they're a bit Sleaford.
Exactly.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got you. Yeah. I've got you. I mean, as you may have discerned, I know absolutely fuck all about music, but even I can tell this is kind of a top-notch podcast. It's very well produced, and if you want to head over to wherever you do pick up your podcast and add it to the playlist, you should, unless you only have time for one podcast, in which case please don't playlist it and stick with this one.
There you go.
There is my wholehearted endorsement. Now on to this week's reviews. First and most excitingly this week sees the return of the OA. This is Britt Marling and Zal Batmanghli's mind-bending sci-fi mystery, and this is one of Boyd's favourite shows of all time, and something I myself definitely considered a must-see event when this dropped in Christmas 2017, I want to say?
16, I think.
2016?
Maybe I'm wrong. No, I think it's
2017.
16, yeah.
16,
yeah.
Christmas 2016. Yes. Wow, that was ages ago.
Yeah, it's 2.5 years.
Well, the show is back, and this picks up exactly where season one left off, with Prairie, a.k.a. the OA, transcending dimensional boundaries and kind of ending up in a new reality entirely. And many of the characters return and are joined this time around by Kingsley Benadire, who plays Kareem, a private investigator on the hunt for a missing girl. It is absolutely bonkers, completely brilliant, and I absolutely couldn't tear my eyes away from it. If you haven't seen the first season of the OA, do so. But if you didn't watch it because you were put off by the sci-fi premise, it is worth pointing out that whatever you think this show is, you are not even close. Is that fair, Boyd?
Yes. I would urge, as you say, I would urge people to watch. So interesting, we'll get Paul's verdict in a minute, because Paul hasn't had time to catch up, have you, on the first season?
No, I had to do the quick recap.
So you jumped straight into the OA season two.
There is a recap at the beginning of the first episode.
Yeah, and there was a couple of ones I had a quick look on YouTube as
But
well,
I'm saying so. Now, Go I'm on. Saying now, so this comes out on Monday, it arrives on Netflix on Friday.
Yeah.
Please, people, if you haven't yet watched it.
You've
got a week.
Yeah.
And it's so worth it, because... For me, the brilliance of this show is you fall in love with it in its texture, in the way it's filmed, in the characters.
Mm.
It's got, you know, the thing people say about characters, which I never agree with, actually. People say, if you don't like the characters, how can you like the thing? I like every character in the show, even the closest it comes to a villain, which is the character of Hap, played by Jason Isaacs. Hello to Jason Isaacs. He himself, now I was lucky enough to go on set for this, which is one of the greatest days of my life, second only to when I was on set of Alan Partridge. And it was so brilliant because, you know, just seeing the way they work, they have an incredibly creative, collegiate way of working, Zal and Britt, who are the showrunners, and she's in it, and he directs most of it, not all of it, and they co-write it and co-create it. It's an incredible collaboration. And he said himself, I don't think I am a villain, even though he plays in the first series, he did really bad things.
Oh, yeah.
His doctor. So, and I'm not going to spoil it, but he did really, really bad things that then Britt Marling's character had to try and sort out. So even he, I like, and he's very, very incredibly entertaining character. But the rest of them, so she meets in season one this group of kids from this local high school, and she kind of saves them. They're like, there's a salvation of them, which is spiritual.
Yeah.
And I'm not a religious person at all. I'm a massive atheist. And then there's their teacher, who's known as BBA, who's a brilliantly lovable figure, kind of outsider figure. They all end up being outsiders in a way. One of them is a trans teenage character who's brilliantly performed. One of them is kind of like a bully who ends up then being, you know, ends up kind of seeing the error of his ways, and not in a cliched way. And they all have to do these movements. So they're the key to this is not a spoiler, this is the whole thing really. They're the movements are the key to getting you into another dimension and traveling through the dimensions. That's so if you can deal with that as a concept and watch it play out in front of your eyes and not go, oh, this is bullshit, then you can immerse yourself in this glorious world. And I think if you give yourself up to it, it's almost like a religious act. I'm getting carried away, but I feel it's true. You have to have the faith in this as an incredibly creative, bold thing. And it's like, for me, the brilliance of it is, it's like a puzzle box thing, but not. So you're not trying to work out, you're trying to work out the mysteries of it with the characters, along with them.
Yeah, yeah.
But so it's got a side mystery this new season with the detective character. Mm. Brilliantly, and he's British.
He's great.
He's really good. Yeah. I interviewed him. He's an Arsenal fan from Camden. He's a lovely guy, and he's got a brilliant accent. He's like a classic film noir detective. Mm. One of the first ever the creators think person of color who's a film noir detective. They also think that this is the only show they think, and listeners can fathom it out if it's true. They think it's the only hour long TV series that has a female showrunner and star. And I think they might be right because I'm racking my brain, so I don't think there is one. So all of these things, it's pushing back the boundaries.
Westworld. It's,
co-showrunner. Maybe you're right. Yeah, Westworld. Oh, God, you've done it. That's annoying. That's really annoying.
Sorry, boy.
Anyway, this is better. This is so much better than Westworld. So this is you're following the mysteries of the show along with the characters. So extraordinary things happen in front of your eyes, and you don't know what they are, but nor do the characters. They're trying to work these things out at the same time. The storytelling is brilliant and beautiful, and it is literally probably my favourite thing that's ever been on Netflix. I prefer it to Stranger Things and all those things.
Yeah, it's,
I
think it's the highest quality.
It's so brilliantly done and beautifully made, and the storytelling is so... It's about storytelling. The characters are so likeable and three-dimensional, and even its weirdness and even its moments of ludicrousness, they know they're ludicrous. You know, you don't need to tell them they're doing weird, ludicrous things. They're aware of it. They know the movements are bizarre and almost funny, but you have to go along with it, and it's an act of faith, and it's absolutely will repay your faith, I think.
Paul, what did you make of this? Did it blow your mind?
The one thing that struck me was... It has a 37-minute pre-credit sequence.
Well, funny you should mention that.
Go on.
So in episode one, it's 57 minutes, or it comes in
almost
literally
feature length.
Almost. So I think the episode is something like 72 minutes, and the credits arrive after about 50 something minutes, which I spoke to them about, and they were very, very proud of that moment. So for them, there was like they suddenly thought, so she starts telling a story, and then suddenly it says Netflix presents, and the credits roll, and they were like they wanted a spine tingly moment, and it is a spine credits can be a spine tingly moment. Carry on,
because you've heard a ripple of the theme a couple of times, and then suddenly there they are, the full considering I'd not seen it before, I found it very easy to get into. What's the kind of big question in the first series? Whether she might have actually been making the whole thing up.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Right. So, because that moment where the credits roll arrive in the very first episode comes where she gathers these students and BBA, their teacher, in this attic space.
Her team.
Tells them the extraordinary story, her origin story, which goes to being born in Russia and having this bus crash. This is, you know, you can still carry on watching without... These aren't spoilers, I don't think.
No, these are not spoilers. And we won't go into the spoilers.
And that's her story, right? And then everything that happens with Jason Isaacs' character is also her story. And again, when I interviewed him, he said, you know, he's reading the script and he suddenly thought, I might be a figment of her imagination.
Yeah.
So I think my feeling is... I'm trying not to spoil it, but it's everything is up for grabs. Everything is in doubt to some extent because it is all about with the stories we tell each other and why. There's a whole computer game thing going on. That is a new form of storytelling. So that's a big... I love that.
Gamers, aren't they?
Yeah. So there's a big gamer thing going on, which I remember when they told me about it, I was like, oh, that could go horribly wrong, because when you try and do something so current, and it's got a very, like, we're really dealing with current young people are doing with their lives, right? With the kids. And that can go horribly wrong. But I thought they dealt with it brilliantly. I mean, I felt it kind of all rang true, that stuff. But James may know more than me.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm down with the kids. They're all hanging out there playing games, listening to Sleaford Mods, and, you know, it's extraordinary stuff. No, the game aspects of it I really appreciated, like the way you have them. So it's kind of that play on crack houses, isn't it? Instead of having loads of junkies in rooms shooting up, they're all sitting there they're having a LAN party playing first-person shooters and stuff, which I find hilarious.
Yeah.
These are my people. And as a recovering World of Warcraft addict, I can really identify with all this stuff. But it was great, and I love the game angle as well. And as I said, I've only watched the first two episodes, but that's only been a time constraint thing. I will absolutely mainline this. I cannot wait to watch the rest of it.
It's so
extremely
addictive.
Exciting.
And you know that emptiness you have. So I've watched six out of the eight. I'm already furious that I've only got two more episodes to go, and I'm going to have to wait.
Yes, you are.
It's going to take them a long time to make this series. That's the thing. They put so much into it. It took them 2.5 years, you know. And I think they were still working on it pretty close to how people would be going, why the fuck isn't it? Where is it? Everyone.
Yeah. This is one of those shows where when it first aired, when the final episode when you saw the final episode, the first thing you did was immediately go to the internet and Google what the fuck just happened.
Yeah.
And you wanted to read everything you could possibly do. You wanted to read every interview. And you were like, there must be more of this. I need more of this in my life. I want as much of this in my life as I can get. So absolute recommendation. If you have not watched the OA season one, please do so. If you have watched it, then you will already be waiting for this. This drops on Netflix on Friday, March the 22nd, the OA season two. This week also sees the return of Billions. Season 4 of Billions arrives. Now, full disclosure here, I have been meaning to watch Billions pretty much since it started, and I never got around to it. So while I have absolutely no doubt, Boyd, you jumped straight into Season 4 with both feet, I instead opted to take a different tack. So I went back... and watched the pilot episode instead.
Maverick.
Yeah, because I'm a Maverick. So instead of watching the new ones, I went back and watched the beginning instead. So at least I would know what I'm talking about. And genuinely, I really, really enjoyed this. So this show, at least as it starts, this is the story of US Attorney Chuck Rhodes, this is played by Paul Giamatti, who's gunning for shifty billionaire hedge fund manager Bobby Axelrod, played by Damian Lewis. And lest we forget, this is a show that begins, its very first episode, with a bound and gag Giamatti being urinated on by Maggie Siff, which is not something you see a lot
the pilot.
Of.
Yes, sorry. In the pilot, Hold on, Paul, remember, he's reviewing the pilot. He's in his own world. Yeah. We watch the new episode, he reviews the pilot.
I review the pilot.
You know.
That's, you know.
You just have to accept the madness.
Just roll with it.
It's another dimension.
It is another dimension.
James is in his own dimension.
Yes,
definitely.
I performed the movements and went to a dimension where the show is beginning this week.
The OD.
Yeah.
The original doofus.
Yeah. Thank you, boy.
Carry on.
Oh, God.
Yes, she urinates on him.
She urinates on him, and I loved particularly the urination, but I really enjoyed I really enjoyed this episode, and honestly, I don't know why I waited so long to watch it. And the two leads are absolutely magnetic, and my favourite part of this, there's a dick measuring scene, not a literal one, metaphorical one, between Lewis and Giamatti at the end of the pilot, which gave me shivers. Just like, Lewis in particular, the venom. I expect big things to come from this. But that is not I'm emphasising what we're here to discuss. We don't want to know about that. We want to know what's to come in season three. What does that look like? And what does it look like,
Paul? So,
well, season four.
Season four.
So, yes. See, I don't even know how many years it's going for. So what we want to know...
I've reviewed season three.
Yes. You've reviewed season three. I've reviewed season one. And then we'll get to Boyd, who'll be doing season four.
Well, the thing with season four is... we are immediately going to be spoilering for you.
Oh, don't worry about
that. The main antagonism from the premise of it, which is obviously Chuck versus Axe, that completely ends at the end of season three.
Damn it!
Yeah. So, is due to Chuck is no longer U.S. attorney. Essentially, it's them and Wendy sat around a kitchen table saying, you know, they have a plan to overturn their new enemies, who are various different people. There's Grigor, who's John Malkovich's Russian oligarch.
Ooh, exciting.
There's also non-binary analyst Taylor. They have a very big role in this. So the end of season three was very exciting for a moment when you're like, oh my God, you know, they've joined forces. This is either the most brilliant thing or it's the most terrible thing, because it completely destroys, you know, the original dynamic of the show. But actually, I really like it. I like them being on the same side. You know, I do not understand at all the world of hedge funding. Every single time I sit and watch this at home, by the end of the episode, half of the jargon and everything that they're saying, it goes completely out of my head.
What is a hedge fund? It's nothing to do with topiary, is it?
No. Boy, what exactly?
What is it?
I don't know. It's a bad. My feeling about hedge funds is that it's the bad side of capitalism. Like, there's a good side, but it's the really bad side. And it's people exploiting, companies and businesses for their own benefit, and they're kind of betting against things failing.
And it's called a hedge fund, we think, because they hedge on things.
They kind of bet on businesses.
Yeah.
And you know, and then but they can't lose if you're you know. That's my. I may be completely.
So really, what you're saying is I should have paid much more attention while watching The Big Short, and then I'd know exactly what
a little
this is
bit.
About.
Yeah, okay. But I think it's interesting you say that, because I think this, what for me, the great thing about Billions is it's like a stealth drama. It's on the surface, it's about that world of high finance and politics and the Attorney General versus this ruthless hedge fund guy. But it's actually about toxic masculinity. That's what it's about.
Yes,
and the
you're
whole,
right. Absolutely.
The thing, the reason why episode one has the urinating scene, and so Paul Giamatti's character is a sub. He's in a sub-dom relationship with his wife, and it's all about him and his sexuality, and it was all, and that dick waving contest. You're right. That it's that stuff. There's scenes with his father. There's a brilliant scene with his dad in his first episode.
His dad is terrifying.
Who is terrifying. And if you watch like throughout the series, he loves talking about his past sexual antics. How he slept with three women in one day. In this episode, there's a reference to him in bathhouses and things, and taking drug taking and so his kind of guy works with him says, I don't want to hear about your part. You know, no one wants to hear about that, this old guy. But it's his kind of upfront rampant masculinity that you then see, oh, that's why Paul Giamatti is as he is.
What's that line? He said, I would slap your face and tell you to act like a man if I didn't think that it would turn you on.
Right. Yes, exactly. There's a scene in, I think, the last series where they kiss, where he kisses him on the lips. He grabs him. The dad grabs. And it pushes the boundaries. As you say, one of the characters, Taylor, played by Asia Kate Dillon, is a non-binary actor playing a non-binary character, the only one, I think, I'm aware, on TV. Apart from maybe the OA, but I think the OA sees that character sees herself as a trans character. Mm. Anyway, it's groundbreaking in that way. And it's all kind of by stealth, though, because it's still got that plot line. It's still about these incredibly rich people fighting each other, basically. But all the sex stuff that goes on, it's really about that, because that's where all the tasty stuff happens. And it has very funny pop culture references all the way through. It's kind of about how people are now with, you know, trying to be big-dicked macho people and how that plays out in this day and age, really, especially if you're really rich and powerful. It's great. It's a really good show.
But it's not like it has. Soapy's not the word, but you know what I mean.
Oh, it's pulpy.
Yeah, that's pulpy.
It actually revels in its over the topness. Mm. Yeah. When Paul Giamatti's dad kisses him on the lips, that is like practically like a twisted moment from, you know, Dynasty on drugs or whatever. Yeah. It is demented. You don't need to know what the F a stealth fund is. I've got my own.
I'd love a stealth fund.
Yeah, stealth fund is good. Yeah. The whole show is a stealth fund.
I think it's Damian Lewis's best thing he's done as well.
Yeah, I think I agree. Yeah. And Paul Giamatti reveling in the perversity of
love Paul Giamatti.
He's so good.
Love Maggie Siff as well, who, lest we forget, is a stalwart character in Sons of Anarchy, which I'm watching at the moment. Good stuff. That is Billions Season 4, which drops on Sky Atlantic, well, the first episode, I should say, on Wednesday, the 20th of March.
9 p.m.
At 9 p.m. Next up is Series 3, but actually Series 3. This time, not actually Series 4. This is Series 3 of Victoria. This is ITV's ongoing period serial about the early life of Queen Victoria with former Whovian assistant Jenna Coleman.
Clara.
Are you impressed? I know that.
Yes.
Yeah, she's wearing the crown in this. This is another one that, I'll be honest, I didn't see. So, similarly, I went back and watched the first episode of. So, start at the beginning, you know,
crazy
rather than start at the end. I don't think that's controversial. So I watched episode one of this where Victoria inherits the crown and, she, you know, and she's navigating court and politics, her difficult mother, her bellend stepfather, you know, all at the tender age of 18. I thought it was beautifully produced with gorgeous costumes and lovely set design. No, it's great. Like, it really wallows in that 19th century setting, and it's got a really, really fantastic cast as well. Really great performance from Coleman. I very much enjoyed Rufus Sewell, as we all, I'm sure, always do, as the PM, sort of navigating the 1838 equivalent of Brexit.
He's not in anymore.
He's not. Oh, no, damn it. Yeah, I will say, from watching the first one, it does feel at times like a weird cross between a monarchy-based period drama and Mean Girls.
Wow.
Which was, I wasn't expecting that, but I'm down
sell.
With it. Yeah. I was really enjoying it. Like, Boyd, how, for you, first of all, how does this sort of measure up to the crown? Like, where's it on relation to that? Yeah. And more importantly, how does Series 3 measure up full stop?
I think it's, from the start, I felt it was like the crown meets
Mean Girls?
Downton Abbey.
Okay.
And I know you're a Downton fan.
Mm.
But what
love
it does,
a bit of Downton.
You love a bit of Downton. What this does, I think it's so Downton was very soapy, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Mm. And, oh, very.
But it had
yeah.
the upstairs downstairs thing yeah. going. And this,
but
is,
this has that too,
right? Exactly. Mm. So this has the upstairs downstairs. And I remember being slightly cynical about that thing when I thought, oh, you know, maybe they're doing that because of Downton and people. If you're going to do
yeah.
a posh royalty drama, you have to have the normal people.
Got to have the servants
well.
Selling
but
their
actually,
gloves.
But I've been one round, and I now think Daisy Goodwin created this, and she's very very smart. And I think what she's done is. It's like you can't make a show about this world without showing everyday people and their lives. And it's getting more and more like that. So now in this series, you've got people, working class people, you know, getting their movement together.
This is the Chartists.
Yeah. You know, so and that whole element of it, that storyline is really interesting and really fascinating. And you've got the French Revolution just happened. So you've got that, you know, how are they going to be affected by that? So she kind of, with a very light touch, she does address the social political elements of the time in the same way The Crown does brilliantly, you know, and so I think it's not quite as amazingly what's the word? I mean, it's not, you know, it's a smaller budget than The Crown, but it does look great, as you say. It is very well filmed, very well shot, very well produced, brilliantly cast and acted. So it's kind of almost there in The Crown. And I'm not even The Crown's biggest fan, by the way, either. But I think this is it's doing as good a job as you could possibly do of creating a drama about this iconic figure, is what I would say. And I really love Tom Hughes, by the way, as Bertie, her husband. He's got a soft, spoken German accent. He's like that, talks like that. And he's still been doing it since the first, right at the beginning. And he's a lovely guy. And he's the one who's trying to show Victoria that their poor people are poor. She's got to think about them. He's great.
Can I say, you're going to get in a world of shit for that.
That's how he talks.
No,
I did German A-level.
Or you're going to do really well. Because I have been castigated on social media for my German accent that I used on this. When I talk about Fremdscham, or especially when I talk about Das Boot.
Das Boot is real German. Tom Hughes is not German. I'm just saying Tom Hughes is funny, whispery German.
That
is funny.
Like, it is very
whispery.
Yeah. Okay, good.
I feel sorry for Tom Hughes because in the first season, it was kind of all about Lord M, Rufus Sewell's character, who I think, you know, really was as much the reason that it became the big hit it was. And when he departed in season two, I think it did lose something for a while. I think this season, she's got, there's a variety of new cast. She's got a sister turns up, Sister Theodora, who's played by Kate Fleetwood. There's also Lawrence Fox as Pam, that's Lord Palmerston, Foreign Secretary, and John Sessions as the PM.
I think Lawrence Fox is fantastic, by the way.
Yeah.
Because you're right, we didn't maybe miss thingy.
Lord M.
Rufus.
But Fox totally sinks his teeth into it. He's a ladies' man. He's like, he's cocky, isn't he?
He's got a cane, he twiddles, yeah. And he smokes big cigars.
Yeah, he's really funny and really, really engaging. Yeah, he's great.
Well, that is Series 3 of Victoria, which begins on ITV on Sunday, March the 24th at 9 p.m. Lastly this week is Pose, the latest show from American Horror Story's Ryan Murphy. This one actually aired on FX in the States last summer, but it's taken a long time to come to Blighty. But it has arrived this week. This is set in 80s New York. It's kind of a hell of a show to try and sum up in a sentence, isn't it? It's like a celebration of fashion, literary types, ball culture, diversity, and sexuality. Is that?
Absolutely.
Could cover it slightly.
Yeah. I thought they would say ball culture if you knew what that was before you saw this program.
No, I didn't. And I still honestly don't. Like, I don't even know what voguing is, so I'm really not the person to ask. Are the Sleaford mods in this?
They're not, but voguing is the way in, though. I was going to say that. So the way into what the hell is ball culture, I didn't really know what it was either. But so voguing came from that. So Madonna's Vogue, the whole and the video and everything, which I think was directed by David Fincher.
Which was about 3 years later, wasn't it? It was 90, I think.
So it was kind of like taking... So these balls were mainly LGBT people gathering in, like, they would do it in like ballroom spaces in hotels. They weren't officially supposed to be there. They would sneak in and take over these spaces and celebrate their diversity, celebrate their sexuality and their whatever you want to call it, and by voguing, by kind of walking and having these lavish, incredible costumes to music. And it's a kind of like peacocky, showing offy thing, but as a celebration. And they're divided into houses, which I never knew about this. So a person would be head of a house and they'd gather young people who wanted to get involved in this world, you know, one of the characters has been thrown out of, like the gay guy's been thrown out of his family's house, which is really, really horrible and nasty done. And then he's taken under the wing of one of the people in charge of one of these houses. So they're like on a like families brought together who haven't got families because of their sexuality and gender, whatever. And it's a really interesting thing. And that this whole drama series is explaining to us in a very, very, I think, entertaining and engaging way. I think it is fascinating because it's just see a thing, a world that you kind of heard a little bit about on the edge of your culture, but mainly through the fact that Madonna did a song called Vogue.
Yeah.
And this kind of expands on that, doesn't it? And deepens it. And it shows you this whole world, which is...
I mean, Ryan Murphy knows what he's doing, doesn't he? So
he really does. But this has got a really interesting structure, didn't you think? Like, because it starts off by kind of being almost like a very narrative light celebration of this world.
Yeah.
Of all those things you mentioned in your intro that I've now witted on about and trying to explain what the hell they are. And then the kind of the storyline elements almost arrive until halfway through this first episode, I felt anyway. And then suddenly you're really riveted by it.
Yeah. And apparently, I think as it goes on, it sort of digs down much deeper into the families that really is more even than actually the ball culture. It's about the different houses, aren't there? There's the House of Abundance, who are the first house that we meet. And then Blanca, who is in House of Abundance, decides to go off and do a different house, which is called the House of Evangelista after Linda Evangelista.
But there's also this whole Donald Trump element.
Yeah, yes.
But I thought that was great. So this whole James Van Der Beek plays a person who works for Donald Trump in Trump Tower, and we meet him, and he's obviously this, and I think he's like the kind of cipher for Trump, really, because he's this kind of like twat.
I like James Van Der Beek. You don't see enough of him these days.
No, absolutely. He's really good, yeah. And Evan Peters plays his employee who has a relationship with one of these people who we meet in the...
Angel, isn't it?
Angel.
India Moore.
Right, a trans person. And that was the moment where I really got engaged with the narrative.
Yeah.
When Evan Peters arrives, who's obviously a Ryan Murphy regular for American Horror Story, etc., who's always brilliant. And that storyline totally gripped me. As well. So I think by the end of this kind of almost feature length first episode, I think, 75 minutes, I thought he does a unique thing, doesn't he? Yeah. He takes these worlds and just infuses them with so much kind of passion and drama. I think it's incredible.
Yeah, worth watching, not just because it's great, a great show, but because it gives you a window into something that you almost certainly didn't know existed.
Absolutely.
And it's compelling on both levels. That is Pose, which airs, Boyd, when does it air? Because I don't know.
It airs on BBC Two. On Wednesday, the thingy of thingy.
Wednesday, the thingy of thingy.
Wednesday,
on BBC
Two. 20th of March.
20th of March.
Yes.
20th of March. And of course, if you're in America, you will have seen this already. Now, we are running horribly late this week. However, before we sign off, as is customary, we are going to do the Banshee segment. Now, Paul, you'll know this because you did the podcast, but this is our celebration of great shows of years gone by, like the aforementioned Banshee. Do you ever watch Banshee?
I know, but I'm tempted now that you've gone on about it so much.
Yeah. How many times do I have to refer to this as the Banshee segment before you go back and watch Banshee? I'm holding
30. I'm waiting for the 30th podcast.
Right, have you watched The Expanse yet?
No.
Honestly, and you call yourself a fan? I'm frankly put out. How about The Shield?
Oh, well, I want to see The Shield from the beginning.
All right. That's intent, but it's not accomplishment.
Well, it's massive. Yes.
Look, you know, you go home.
I can't just nip.
Go home. Put on a Sleaford Mod CD. Get your DVD of The Shield. Queue up The Expanse. You know, you've got homework. You've got stuff to do. Anyway, I digress. So, Banshee, I'm going to go first this time. For my part, I've chosen a comedy just to show that I'm an inscrutable enigma.
Incredible.
You ready?
Yeah.
Specifically, I've chosen Fresh Meat.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Very good. This is Sam Bain and Jesse Armstrong's uni sitcom about a shared house of mismatched students and their undergraduate antics. Among them, the in-between is Joe Thomas, who plays Kingsley. Greg McHugh is in this as Howard, and Zoe Ashton, who I thought was the highlight of this show, as Vod. It also marked the acting debut of Jack Whitehall. Do you know that?
Oh, yeah.
That's his acting debut. And hot fact for
you. Well, I think the dramatic acting debut. Yeah, he was in Bad Education, wasn't he?
Before this?
I think so.
Was it? Was it? Because I've seen Bad Education. I did enjoy it, but I didn't think it was prior to Fresh Meat.
Okay, I'll check.
Yeah, you look at that while I'm going on about this.
Yeah.
Here's a hot fact. I saw Jack Whitehall do stand-up last week. after we did the
Amazing.
Podcast. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I went to the
Was he the surprise comedian?
He was the surprise comedian. Wow. I went to the Top Secret Comedy Club in Covent Garden, and he came on to road test some of his new jokes.
Do you know what? Right. Right. Fresh Meat 2011, Bad Education 2012.
That's what I'm saying.
I apologise.
That's what I'm saying. This was his acting debut, and then Bad Education, which was also really funny.
Yeah.
The film, less so. But yeah, so I went to the comedy thing, and this guy came on, and it was very sort of like slightly old school, almost like 70s stand-up, like really, really broad. I didn't like it at all. And I was just like, this is terrible. Like, I'm not laughing at all. This is a disaster. And then they said, oh, it's Jack Whitehall. And he came on and he did a 40-minute set. And I pissed myself all the way through, like proper gut laughing, absolutely laughed my ass off. This is me as well.
Proper so, gut laughing. Yeah, unbelievable.
It was great material. Like, he was really, really good.
Out.
I really enjoyed myself. And I looked like a person who had a sense of humor, which is, you know, what I aspire to. So that was good. But I'm, again, I'm digressing. So. Fresh Meat. So this is a comedy I actually enjoy. I think, if I recall, I got into Fresh Meat because of Joe Thomas, because of the Inbetweeners link. Mm. But actually, if I'm honest with you, I prefer Fresh Meat to the Inbetweeners. I love the characters, great mix of personalities. And I thought it really captured that, you know, it's like that melting pot of like pretension and artifice, almost all uni friendships kind of sort of come out of. This is a show that made me laugh. I think the gag hit-miss ratio is very, very high. It ran for four series from 2011 to 2016. And I do not mind saying the finale of this very hit me in the feels.
Wow.
It's I thought the finale was a real like, oh, this is, you know, it's quite profound. It's like, you know, it's good. Good stuff. So that is Fresh Meat. If you fancy fun character-led comedy, then I do recommend it, especially if you like students at a Manchester university.
I was just going to say Dead Pixels, which is coming soon on E4, from the team that did Fresh Meat. It's from Sam Bain and Jesse Armstrong, who created it, their production company, and one of the writers, John Brown, who wrote a lot of Fresh Meat, has written this. So
did you know that Sam Bain and Jesse Armstrong, when they wrote the first episode of Fresh Meat, they did it while watching a VHS of The Young Ones? So
no,
I think
didn't.
some of that
fact.
DNA Great filtered stat. Into it. You can pick up all four series of Fresh Meat for £12
Amazing.
On secondhand DVD.
Amazing.
So, you know, if you want to, go and do that.
Incredible.
Who wants to go next?
Paul.
What's your
then.
Banshee?
It is The Cops.
The Ooh. Cops. I don't know what that is.
Which was, I think I'm right in saying, the BBC's first ever really gritty police procedural.
BBC Two?
BBC
yes.
Two. World Productions, who, of course, since the Line of Duty, Bodyguard, Save Me, all of those. This was, they'd done one cop show before called Between the Lines, but this was a whole different thing. The opening scene, it's Katie Kavanagh is a young woman in the nightclub doing drugs in a toilet. You follow her, she suddenly looks at a watch, rushes out and runs to work. It's like 5:30 in the morning, and you see her go into the police station, and she is like she's a police officer. Which I think actually, no offense, did sort of nick that idea
a little bit for their opening one.
But it ran for three seasons. It got the BAFTA for Best Drama 2 years in a row.
It was brilliant. Do you know what?
And disappeared
as well?
And absolutely disappeared. Yeah. It was only ever repeated once.
You know what? It's a little bit like a British version of The Shield.
It's the British Shield.
It is.
It's the British Shield. Yeah. And
I think I might have even mentioned it when you first talked about The Shield. I think because it is one of the great British cop shows. Yeah.
Annoyingly, I mean, I was trying to find it. Couldn't even find DVDs of it. It's on YouTube. The first season.
Oh.
As like 1 6.5-hour clip.
Okay.
Bizarrely.
All right. Well, maybe I'll track that down.
I think it was once repeated on UK TV. And since then, it has never been again.
Wow.
You know,
That's a good banshee.
Great
banshee.
The Cops, then. The British Shield.
Yeah.
Sold.
Yeah.
Boy, top that.
Well, in my endless search for slightly too obscure comedies that shouldn't be as obscure as they are, Mr. Sloan. Do you remember Mr. Sloan?
Yes.
This is from 2014. Listen to the talent that went into this series. Robert Wiley created it and wrote Curb Your Enthusiasm fame. He wrote and directed a lot of Curb Your Enthusiasm. He's pretty much best mates with Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David. He created it. It stars Nick Frost and Olivia Colman and Ophelia Lovibond and Peter Serafinowicz.
Oh, my God.
It's set in the 60s. And Nick Frost plays this kind of depressive guy who's pretty much suicidal. And his wife, played by Olivia Colman, left him. So a lot of it is like him lamenting why has she left him, because he's kind of boring and stultifying. And it's all about being boring and stultifying in a kind of suburban setting. That Robert Wiley, this American, came in and decided he's fascinated by, he's a kind of Anglophile anyway, of kind of British, you know, sitcoms of that kind. So it's almost like a revival of a kind of quite downbeat. And I think this is why it was only one series. It wasn't a hit. It was on Sky Atlantic, I think. not that many people watched it because it was, for a comedy, downbeat and quite and dealing with quite depressing topics. But it was really good. And Nick Frost was fantastic. And when is he ever not fantastic? Mm. Olivia Colman was, of course, brilliant. And it's a really interesting thing. And it's still on Sky box sets and Now TV box sets, I think. And probably on DVD for about £2.
Mr. Sloan.
Well, can I just say as well that I was wrong about when Poser's on? It's on Thursday.
Oh, what are you like?
So I can, it's on Thursday, the 21st of March.
And we're saying that this started before Bad Education or after it?
Yeah, all right. Okay.
And there is a season two, isn't there, coming, I think, in America.
Pose, yes, I believe.
Yes, indeed there is. Yeah. Right, and on that note, that is it for another episode of the Pilot TV Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, then do pop over to iTunes and show your appreciation in the traditional manner, that being the bestowal of 5 stars and a glowing review. If, on the other hand, you did not enjoy the episode, then head over to Twitter and address your grievances to @Terry_White, outlining all the reasons why you didn't like it, and possibly mentioning how you missed her dulcet northern tones this week. Terry will be back next week, and we will be looking at Amazon TV's adaptation of 2011 Joe Wright film, Hannah. And I believe, I'm right in saying, Boyd, the return of The Good Fight.
Oh, yes.
That I'm very excited about. Very excited.
Correct.
About that. In the meantime, big thank you to Paul Simper for lending his wisdom and expertise in all things Sleaford Mod. thanks, Paul. Thanks for that. It's good. It's good to have your music knowledge and expertise on the podcast.
Anytime.
Until next time, Pilot out.
The days are longer, the calendar is filling up, and I want to feel as good as this beautiful summer weather. That's why I've been loving Grüns. It's one daily pack of gummies that covers my greens, vitamins, minerals, and even has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, so I don't need to juggle a complicated wellness routine on top of everything else. They taste amazing, they're easy to toss in my bag on the go, plus they're vegan, gluten-free, and HSA and FSA, eligible for reimbursement. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grüns.co. That's code PODCAST at GRUNS.co.